Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump podcast. I'm Ben.
And I'm Peter.
This is a video game podcast, Peter, where we talk about video games. We are now, if you search Triple Jump, according to our analytics, we are consistently the top few results for Triple Jump.
But is that with a space in? Or all one word?
No, you're right.
I think with a space, you might still just get
loads.
Let's
find out right now.
Right.
Talk about yourself for a minute, Peter.
Hello and welcome to the show. My name is Peter. This is Ben next to me.
Hello. It's all hyphenated, my last name.
I'm 20-something years old. I was born in the north of England. I'm being suitably vague because I don't want to dox myself. Because I've got loads of money in my bank account that you would love to access if only you could.
We're on the big bucks over here.
That's not true at all. I have very little money indeed. Triple Jump.
We dominate. If you search triple space jump, it is our channel comes up first.
Are you logged in as you though?
Yes.
You should have done it incognito.
Oh, well, I mean, the thing is that I'm looking at here is the first proper results of an actual athletics thing.
Yeah.
And it's a good halfway down the page.
Okay, that's good.
So that's something, right?
Yeah, we made it.
Sure. Okay. Well, the wind was taken out of my sails there a little bit, but what I was trying to say was we're obviously way more important now on YouTube than
an actual sport.
Than a big jump. Yeah. Than a stupid, stinky big jump.
It's two small jumps and then one kind of big jump, but you know, just do a long jump, you idiot.
It's like what Neil Armstrong said.
Yeah.
You know, like it's the anniversary of the moon jumpings, as they were called. One small step, and then another small step.
Three giant, small, medium-sized jumps.
Bigger, but sort of still a medium-sized jump for mankind. Oh. Anyway, welcome along to this show. Of course, we cannot do this show without the help of our sponsors, which we're on sort of a weekly rotation of, because we want to give every sponsor a fair shot.
Yeah,
we could sign up to a sponsor that would sponsor us for months at a time, but why would we do that? That's not fun. We prefer the sort of admin nightmare of going through a brand new sponsor every week.
We're an equal opportunities company that allows different kinds of sponsors to come and sponsor us.
Speaking of which,
yes,
this week we are sponsored by the Blaskovich twins.
Oh, are we? What service do they provide?
The Blaskovich twins, aka the Terror twins, what they will do is stand menacingly in your front garden.
Right.
And anybody who is sort of
A Nazi
or alt-right, they will just get them. They'll just get them right on up there. So if you want to hire the Terror Twins for birthdays, bar mitzvahs, weddings, wakes, they're really good at wakes, then you give the Terror Twins a call, the Blaskovich Twins, and they will just come and protect the hell out of your event.
I mean, wakes are a very common target point for
Nazis.
Alt-right Nazi.
It does happen.
Neo-Nazis. Well, that's great. I personally condone that sponsor. I support them in every way.
Yeah.
We love kicking Nazis
before.
And kicking Hitler and killing Nazis.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Famous words of Peter Austin there to a BAFTA panel.
Actual BAFTA
actual
content.
Actual live
there.
On BAFTA.
That went out on BAFTA.
Yeah.
And it's one of the highlights of my career.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, we've spoken about this before on elsewhere, but we were really humming and hawing about whether or not we should actually go to BAFTA because we would be way out of our depth. And surprise, We were.
Yeah.
But we held it together, all right, and we got some fun stories, so it was all worth it.
We sure did.
So thank you very much to Wolfenstein's...
To BAFTA for having us.
And BAFTA. BAFTA's the Blaskovich twins. Thank you very much for sponsoring this show this week. Yes. That's a lie! I got you all.
That whole thing.
I hoodwinked you all, you fools.
You did.
You've been had.
You winked my hood.
I think that's something very different in certain parts of the internet.
Yeah.
What we're actually brought to you by is our wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/teamtriplejump. Through their support alone, we're able to source questions for the podcast.
Can you hear the...
That's the question noise. Mm. And all these fine folks at home have kindly submitted these questions. And we're going to start off with one from Duncan Wilson.
Yeah.
What does Duncan Wilson say?
Duncan Wilson says, if you're playing a game with character selection / creation, do you choose the character closest to yourself or one that is completely different in terms of character or gender? And then there's a colon and a right parenthesis.
Oh, right. Sort of like a... Now... Forgive me if I'm mispronouncing this.
Mm.
An emoticon.
I think it's Emma Tyken.
An Emma Tyken.
Hello, I'm Emma Tyken.
I'm Mrs. Tyken. Mm. Ms. Tyken.
Ms. Tyken.
Let's not be sexist. No. She's not married yet. And she may keep her own name.
Yeah.
We're assuming a lot about this smiley face.
I think Ms. is when you don't know if they're married or not. I think it's Miss. They're not.
Oh, for God's sake. I just can't. I'm just stepping on all the political toes, aren't
yeah,
I?
Yeah, you
are. I can't
get
it right.
No.
What an idiot.
I have a... fairly strong opinion about this.
Custom characters.
Yeah.
Do you always play as someone really big?
Yeah, well, if only. Well, I mean, no, but you're kind of in the right ballpark there in that I've always thought it's a little bit lame, and I'm probably talking to a large proportion of our audience and maybe even you at the moment, so prepare to alienate yourself, Peter. But I've always thought it's slightly lame when people make themselves in a game where you're in a sort of high fantasy setting, or you're like working for a crime syndicate, running around with guns and things,
or murdering thousands of guards in Varrok to level up your strength skill.
I think the one occasion where I may have kind of made myself was, I think the first time I played Fallout 3, I think I'd seen a video online. And the guy who I was watching happened to make himself. And I think I just had it in my head that, oh, well, that's what you do on Fallout. That's just what you do.
Make yourself.
But that was just my first playthrough. But since then, and before then as well, in any game with character customization, I've never made myself. The closest I've ever got to making myself in a game like that, or certainly like a sort of single player experience anyway, is I would sometimes name them Peter, but only if it was... Say it was Fallout, you know, that's not in a fantasy setting. It's set on Earth, and therefore it makes sense that they would have a regular human person name.
Mm.
And so rather than just choose a different one, which I don't know what I'd choose, Dave or Ben, I just put Peter.
Yeah, what a tedious name,
Ben. But, you know, that's, if anything, that's just because, well, what else do I call him, you know, or her? But no, normally I make some sort of character that I envisage being in that situation. And partly it depends on, I often, when I'm playing an RPG, for example, I decide how I'm going to play before I even begin. Mm. So it's like, oh, I'm going to be a thief, or I'm going to be a big warrior. And then based on that character that I have in my mind, I guess you would say, that is who I kind of build in the character creation.
So you sort of build the fiction out of the style of play that you want.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Okay. What about you? Do you make yourself much?
I do make myself. Not very often anymore, but certainly back in the day, I remember Mass Effect 2 was one where I really tried very, very hard to make myself.
Okay.
But I'm not very good at character creation, sweets.
Oh, no.
At all. WWE games as well, I've always sort of made a variation of myself.
I may have
done
that.
To an extent.
Yeah.
But it's hard, you know, it's difficult. Things got a lot easier when I grew a beard because as evidenced by Twitter, whenever anybody who is blonde and has a beard appears on any TV show, it looks just like me, apparently.
Yeah.
So that became a lot easier from sort of a cop-out of character creation.
Yeah.
I made a fairly convincing me in Bloodborne, for example, just because they've got a blonde beard and then most of their face is covered up
half
the time.
Yeah, that's handy.
So it was just... that worked fine.
Well, Jules from What Culture always says, oh, it's really easy to make myself in game creations. It's just custom hair 0 and custom beard 1, and that's it.
That's it, yeah. I suppose, yeah. Once you grow a beard, it makes things a hell of a lot easier just because the bald hair. Facial hair really distinguishes you. You know, when we get you just clink to your mug on the microphone. Sorry. Cheers, everyone. So it's gotten easier since I've grown a beard, but I do like to play as a lady sometimes in games.
Yeah.
I think it's fun to play as the opposite gender and just like make a really badass female warrior or what have you.
Yeah.
Whenever I play through, I mean, I haven't for a while, obviously, but whenever I play through a From Software game for the first time, Dark Souls, Bloodborne, Demon's Souls, I'd usually make a mailman who's sort of vaguely modeled on myself.
Right.
But then in a repeat playthrough, whether it be with friends or just for fun, I would make I usually just go for a tank class, make them as strong and as powerful as possible, and I make just a very small lady.
Right.
Because I think that's fun. Mm-hmm. I think that's a fun combination of things to have.
Yeah.
So it varies for me.
Okay.
But I do get what you mean. It's a little bit lame, isn't it?
To well, make it's, yourself. It's partly that you know that the version of oneself that you might make, or that a stereotypical Cheetos COD gamer boy might make,
right,
would be, you know, have the same hair color and maybe the same shaped hairstyle and beard,
right,
but would just be like this Adonis man.
Yes,
and
huge rippling muscles.
While they're sort of, you know, drizzling Mountain Dew into their topless belly button, you know, and sort of
topless belly button.
Well, they're topless and their belly button is exposed. And
oh, okay.
As they drink, that sort of dribble pools into their
little
green rock pool on their tummy.
No.
And then
that's where the actual crabs live.
There's a small kind of chink in the curtains where a beam.
A what? Sorry.
A chink in the curtains.
Okay.
Where a beam of light is coming in, and you can just see all the dust in the air in their basement dwelling.
Right.
This is, of course, a stereotype of gaming.
This is a huge, massive stereotype.
All of your mums and the newsreaders have of us.
So what Peter is saying is you are only allowed to make yourself in a game if you are gorgeous.
No, if you...
If you're ugly, then you're not allowed.
No, you're allowed, but maybe you should just make yourself and love yourself. You don't have to make yourself like this sort of chiseled beast. If you're, quote-unquote, ugly, then you should make yourself, because you're probably not ugly. Your everything is beautiful, and you should make your beautiful self just as you are.
That's weirdly backhanded.
Yeah.
I feel like you dug yourself right out of that hole pretty well.
I did.
Everybody forgot about what you said.
I'm saying you don't need to live vicariously through a character. Just live through yourself.
But what if they want to play as this perfect space opera version of themselves?
Well, you know what? Anyone is entitled to do whatever they want to do. It's just my advice, you know? You should go and love yourself.
I don't even think you can make a big boy or girl in Mass Effect.
Right.
Especially in the first trilogy, because they're always every NPC you come across that's human is beautiful and perfectly built.
Well,
even
in a space
even the
program.
Old people.
Yeah.
Even the olden people have like
the
big
olden.
Muscles and
yeah.
stuff. It's like that surely there would be some withering with age, but no. Everybody's got the same body. It's fine.
Not in space. In space, your muscles only grow stronger, right? That's
yes.
definitely how it
because
works.
Because of all the gravity in space.
Yeah, it's not that there's just massive muscle atrophy issues and people who spend a few weeks on the space station have like serious issues when they get back to Earth. That's not true at all.
Wobbly legs.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is, if you're ugly, you've got to be ugly in the game. That's
yeah.
what Peter said.
That's
but only
exact...
because you love yourself.
Word for word, that's what I said. You're ugly, make
you're ugly,
an ugly character.
Love yourself.
Yeah.
Peter Austin. That's another one to add to the quote bank, I think.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the next section, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
It's interesting that your question there started with the word what, as in what is it? Because so does this section. That's funny little coincidence. It's what we play in. Ben.
Yes.
This is a segment that we've been doing as long as this podcast has existed.
As long?
As long. Do you remember what it is?
No.
Okay. Well, it's called What We Play In, and in this segment, we talk about the games that we have done been playing on our PlayStation game or other consoles and computers.
Usually PlayStation, just because that's what we have at home.
Yeah. Ben, what are you? Were you been done playing?
I mean, I'm going to... God, if someone put a little chart together of the different games that we played in each of the 24 episodes of this podcast so far, and and just saw how many mentions for each one. I think I've played maybe 6 games since the beginning of the year.
I think in the first maybe 5 or 6 episodes, I made a conscious effort to bring something new every time.
Right.
To the point that sometimes the day before recording, I'd be like, oh, I want a different game. I'm going to just play like an hour of something.
Mm.
I don't do that anymore,
okay.
As you're about to find out. What about you today, this week?
So, I mean, if you look back, it's been, I think, Dark Souls, Borderlands, and then Crash Team Racing. And that's pretty much it. I have been playing a little bit more Crash Team Racing.
Yeah.
I am pleased to announce that I have now beaten all of Entropy's times and unlocked him.
Wow.
Or her. It's a him.
It's a him.
I verified myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's done. I've done all the time trials.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. Just one. You get the other congratulation when I beat all of Nitrous Oxide's times, which is the next step. I tried it on Crash Cove a couple of times. He would beat me severely.
Oh, dear.
Well, not severely. The problem is that I find with these time trials is that tracks that don't have shortcuts are actually really hard because it relies on the sort of ghost time that you've got to beat. What they're doing is just perfectly drifting, perfectly boosting around the entire track. And it's very difficult to beat that.
Yeah.
So I know I said that I was giving up with time trials before.
Mm-hmm.
I may say that again now and then slowly try to chip away at them again.
Yeah, you
at
can't
some
help
point.
Yourself.
But that's the last trophy I need now is to beat all of Oxide's times. But it does mean beating his time trial on like 20-something tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I will ever do that. But it's done. Most of it is done. That was my Everest, and I climbed it.
Okay.
And I did it.
Well climbed.
Thank you.
I'm very proud of you.
Played a little bit of Borderlands 2 as well. There's another classic from the vault there. Had a friend up over the weekend. Never played Borderlands before, so I thought, well, let's play a little bit of Borderlands.
Well, there you go.
Played a little bit of World Wars as well, World War Z.
Mm-hmm.
That was also good fun. That's all I been playing. Outlast.
That's what, yeah.
We both played Outlast, right? Go for it, if that's what you were going to say.
I will, yeah. I mean, I was going to say I have continued to play a bit of Crash Team Racing, although I'm now kind of, I'm very much petering out, if you'll pardon the... I think when the next Grand Prix comes around, I'll want to pick it up again and see the new stuff and unlock some new characters. And then again, when the third one comes out, because that's the Spyro one, apparently.
Ooh. Do you know, sorry to interrupt, do you know if they're rolling straight into the next Grand Prix, or are we going to have a little break?
I don't know, actually.
I don't know if I want to go straight back in again.
No.
It's sort of become not a chore, but now that I'm no longer unlocking stuff, I feel less compelled to play.
I only really, at this point, want to unlock the characters. I don't mind so much about the cosmetic stuff. So I got Torna. I've got the four umbrella ladies, the parasol girls. There's more to them than that, of course.
They're
all individuals.
No.
No, they're not. They were literally based off two models, the four of them from the previous game.
There were only two?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I think they were reskinned, weren't they? I think two of them were the same
right,
model
actually.
And just, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so I'm not playing so much Crash anymore. It doesn't bother me so much about kind of trying to get silver and gold. Although I would like that silver award, that Crash biker suit. Anyway.
You can get it. There's still time. There's 2 days.
I might do. It's
do
just
it.
I've not picked it up for a while. And
okay.
I was away as well last weekend. So, but we've been playing Outlast. At time of recording, we've played our first session, which was live streamed. You can find the VOD on our channel right now. But at time of publishing, we'll have done our second.
Yeah.
But the VOD doesn't go out till Monday, right?
It doesn't. And we haven't played. We're playing it later today.
We are, yes. So if you joined us live for one or both of those, you'll have seen the spooks that have been happening.
And the willies.
Spooky willies have been all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm enjoying that game. I thought I would find it a lot scarier. I had seen a bit of footage of it a long time ago. I think I'd basically seen the first hour of gameplay when you walk past the wheelchair man. And then sort of the big fat man chases you through the drywall and stuff. And I thought, oh man, that's set in an asylum, which has always been it's up there with one of my kind of horror themes that really gets me.
Really?
You know? It didn't help that when I was very young, probably about 8, My great-grandma, who lived until she was 99, was in a like a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, sort of a mixture there of some people who had their marbles, as it were,
right.
But some who unfortunately had dementia, which is very sad. Mm. But when you're an eight-year-old boy and you have to walk down this corridor, it was a really, really, really long corridor. My grandma was at the very end of it.
Right.
And some of the ladies would sort of reach out and stroke my head and say,
okay.
Nice boy, nice boy.
Yeah, that's a little bit spooky.
And nowadays, I'd be fine with that. I'd be like, oh, they're there. You know, it's, you know, do you want to go and play dominoes and walk them into the lounge?
Or something else you can stroke.
Yeah, well, no.
That's what you would say.
But as a little boy, that really scared me. And since then, things of that ilk have really got to me. So
right.
I thought Outlast, the mental health psychiatric hospital game, would be rather frightening.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair thing to be a little bit afeared of,
yeah.
is asylums.
I think it's the notion that you can't reason with the person, you know?
Right.
They're just going to kill you.
The
with
mental
their
faculties are not there.
With their willy out.
Yeah, some of them did.
Yeah.
Twice, actually.
They did. But yeah, I'm not finding it too spookums, fortunately. So
that's good. You can carry on playing it. And
thoroughly
I'll
enjoying it.
I'll keep reading chat.
There's at least there's a sequel, isn't there, as well?
Yes, we saw a bit of that being played, didn't we? You remember?
I feel like I have seen some, but I don't remember where or when.
It was at my flat, and Jules was playing it.
Oh yeah.
And we watched like him play it for an hour and a half, and it had just come out, and it was just gratuitously violent, and
God, yeah,
it really doubled down on the genitalia thing.
Oh yeah, that was the one that set it came out, didn't it come around the same time as a game that was kind of very similar in that it was set in a sort of religious-y kind of rural environment.
Yeah, it was like Resi 7 sort of time.
Yeah.
Is when it came out.
Mm.
Yeah, it was set in very much a Resident Evil 4 kind of location.
Yeah.
Spooky town in the woods kind of deal.
Yeah, that's right. I remember now.
But yeah, that looked a bit frightening.
Mm.
We may play that. Maybe. God,
yeah, that was a bit intense, actually. But yeah, we've been playing Outlast, and I'm finding it less spooky than I thought. There's a few jump scares, but other than that, it's fine.
All good.
It's fine.
As long as you're not allergic to willies.
Yeah.
Because they are in there.
Yep.
And I had to spend 3 hours censoring them out.
They're fairly broad as well, aren't they?
A broad spectrum of Wilsons.
Well, no, each individual Wilson is quite a broad...
It's wide.
Yeah, the model is girth.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's time to move on to another question. This is from Ramirez.
It's Xavier Ramirez. That's how it's pronounced.
Oh, so Ramirez.
Xavier. It's not.
Professor Xavier.
Yeah.
Sony has expressed that they will be moving away from indie games and will be focusing more on AAA games.
Yeah.
Is this a good call on Sony's part, or is it a mistake?
We've got some information on this, haven't we, Ben?
Yes, this is from Push Square. We know that one.
We do.
Sony is investing the bulk of its efforts with the PlayStation 5 into blockbuster games. And according to the Wall Street Journal, that's left indie developers and smaller publishers feeling like outsiders. But speaking with author Takashi Mochizuki. Not sure.
Mm-hmm.
One executive explained that it's not a problem because the platform is simply too large to ignore.
Oh.
There's a hint of arrogance to this statement, but it's not exactly incorrect. At the end of the day, virtually all third-party titles end up on PlayStation because the market is enormous. Still, there's a definite danger that the platform holder could end up initially missing out on indie success stories, so it needs to be careful here.
Mm.
It's quite arrogant, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is, but part of me doesn't really mind that they're doing this, I have to say. I don't play a great deal of indie games. I certainly think indie games are a great thing. And often, when I do finally go, all right, I'll try this indie game out that everyone's talking about, it's always great.
Mm.
And I think, you know, more power to the people. Unfortunately, less money to them, apparently.
Right.
I can see both sides of this. Like, as I say, you know, indie games can be really spectacular. I remember the first time I played Limbo.
Mm-hmm.
That blew my mind. I loved it. You know,
do you want a fun fact about Limbo?
Yeah.
That was nearly released first on PlayStation.
PlayStation what?
PlayStation 3.
Okay.
PlayStation 1.
Yeah.
PlayStation 3. Mm. But because Sony took an attitude like this at the time,
oh, yeah.
It ended up not arriving on PlayStation for like a year and a half.
Oh, okay. Well, I had 360 at the time, so
well, there you go.
I played
so
it
there. You benefited from them taking this approach previously.
I did. So I think it's a shame. It would be a shame to miss out on things like that. But, I mean, number one, I think they're kind. Sony are kind of right that these things will just end up on PlayStation eventually anyway.
Yeah.
And number two, Sony are, for me, the company in terms of first-party blockbusters. Mm-hmm. And I kind of just want them to pump as much into that as possible and see just how far they can go. You know, if they're already doing as well as they are, whilst also to an extent supporting, you know, various indie companies, just how crazy can things get if they just absolutely steamroll into the AAA world and say, this is all we're doing. We're going to make it the best it can possibly be, you know? So yeah. It intrigues me, if nothing else, but it is a shame, I suppose.
I don't think that they would be missing out on much if they changed tact and decided to actually support indie games like they did a few years ago, for example. I can't imagine that the resources that they were dedicating at the launch of the PS4, where they had an entire initiative and they were wearing shirts and everything, PlayStation Loves Indies, was a whole initiative, and their E3 conferences, they had loads of indie games on show and stuff. I don't imagine that the effort it took to put that together will improve or increase the output of their AAA games. I really think the difference is negligible. I think they stand to potentially miss out on some really good stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
I still think that even if they were loving indies as they did a few years ago, that we'd still get God of War 2, we'd still get Marvel's Spider-Man 2,
oh, we'd still
The Last
get them
of Us
for sure.
Part 2, all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
And you're right, like, I can't say that I play many indie games at all.
Yeah.
There's an awful lot of them out there. But apparently, these indie developers have been feeling quite spurned for a while. They feel like they have no relationship with PlayStation whatsoever.
Mm.
The Switch is a great place for indie games. And increasingly, you're seeing indie games released exclusively on the Switch before eventually coming elsewhere. I feel like PlayStation are going to miss out on potentially some really, really big stuff. Because statements like this don't help.
The statement's not good.
No, the statement does not make them look good at all.
No.
If they would just sort of continued their current trend, which is indie games, whatever, but we're not going to talk about it. The fact that apparently someone has actually said they're too large to ignore, that makes them look really bad and probably raises the hackles of a lot of very talented indie developers who would otherwise consider releasing their game on that platform. And you're right. I don't imagine that many of those developers will turn down the payday of putting it on PlayStation eventually. Anyway, regardless of what PlayStation have said. But I can't help but feel that making it known that this is their feelings toward indie games is not helpful.
That was definitely, the statement isn't great. But, you know, it's interesting, like, Sony has long had a good relationship with indies, and they've facilitated that. And not just, as you say, you know, that campaign of Sony loves indies, PlayStation, Net Yorosé, remember that?
No.
From on PS1. I don't know if it was called the same thing on PS2 or not, but it was essentially a kind of dev kit that anyone could get. I think it was like a certain build of the PlayStation model.
Right.
And it also...
Was this the black PS1?
Yeah, I think it was the black PS1. I think that's the same thing. And I think you could somehow integrate it with a computer and it would allow you to basically code games for your PlayStation. Mm-hmm. And it was for anyone.
Yeah.
You know, anyone who had one of these was able to do to use it. And then they would distribute sort of those games on official PlayStation Magazine demo discs as well, which was handy.
That's very cool.
So that's something that, you know, goes back a long time. And again, like I say, they did something similar on PS2. I don't know if it was called the same thing.
Mm.
But they've always been sort of facilitating that kind of the next generation of developers. I think someone who made a NetEuroSI game that was on a PlayStation demo disc ended up working on one of the Final Fantasy games and stuff.
Nice.
So, you know, it's that. I don't think it was necessarily the main series one, but it was, you know,
right.
in the
one of those crap ones.
Yeah, one of those ones that you don't even know what it's called. But I don't know. So it's funny to think that once upon a time they were really actually so supportive of indie developers and, mm-hmm. and hobbyists. And now this is the attitude. Just, well, you know, they'll come to us eventually.
Yeah.
I don't know. You're right that, you know, maybe dropping indies won't actually add enough of a benefit to their AAA scene to warrant doing it. But if it did, I don't mind that they're sort of dropping. Because I feel like, you know, the indie games are still going to be available on PC and, you know, as they say, they may eventually end up on PlayStation anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, if it doesn't actually make a big difference positively towards the quality of their AAA games, then yeah, maybe it's a bit harsh to do that and it's not worth doing. But I don't know.
Their attitude seems to sort of come in waves based on how humbled they have been.
Right.
So while they may have started off as the plucky underdog and released this special black PlayStation you could buy to develop your own stuff.
Yeah.
They then had meteoric success with the PS1. Mm. And then the PS2. PS3 came out, very expensive, a year after the Xbox 360 in a lot of places, sometimes 2 years after. Mm. We got it 2 years after in Europe, or nearly 2 years after. And they tripped over their own shoelaces because they were full of themselves. And yeah. They thought, we don't need this stuff. They had this exact same attitude back then, not necessarily towards indie games, but just in general. Like, we're too big to ignore. People will come to us. And
we
people
can wait
didn't.
2 years. Yeah.
Right. And it was disastrous for them. And eventually they got back on track. And they were humbled by that. So when the PS4 was coming out and they were ramping up to that, they had a completely different approach. They had this new mantra, for the players, where it wasn't like, we're PlayStation. You'll buy it, idiot.
Yeah.
You like games, don't you, moron? Buy our console, you bloody idiot.
Mm.
And now it feels like we're moving back sort of towards that PlayStation of old again.
The hubris.
Where they're not coming to E3 and they're not saying why. And they're not talking about their new games. They're not really talking about their next console. They're just sort of teasing it and saying, you'll find out when you find out.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, we don't need indies because they'll come to us. It's like, really, again? We're doing this again?
Mm.
I don't want to see the fall again before the eventual rise and the humility and then the fall again.
Yeah.
This has played out before for PlayStation. This is, for me, not so much about indies, but it's symbolic of a larger larger issue,
right,
that has been present within PlayStation for years. So hopefully this doesn't represent that.
Yeah.
Because I like indie games. I don't play them all. Some people do. But I just want small companies or individuals who are passionate about making games to feel welcome on a platform that I enjoy.
Yeah, because
it could
be the next big thing.
Yeah.
And I don't just mean their indie game could be the next big indie game. I mean, those companies, given a bit of success and a bit of interest from their audience,
yeah,
could go on to much bigger and better things. So yeah, actually, it's always worth supporting the underdogs. So
hopefully that's just either a misquote or not truly representative, or maybe PlayStation bucked their ideas up, because I think it sets, I mean, a dangerous precedent is a bit of an overstatement here, because it's a video game company. But I do think it does set a precedent that is perhaps a little self-destructive. So
yeah,
we'll see, won't we? Mm. We'll bloody see.
Well, it's time from something that was quite serious and almost a bit of a big discussion, I think, that was getting quite intense.
Quite
there.
Discussion-y.
We should relax with some weird news.
Weird news.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Peter.
Yes.
Austin.
Yes.
Boop, 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 boop. Take me to Weird Town.
Hello, phone. Which POC?
He's going.
Do you live in?
He's rooting around for this weird device.
Right.
He's got it. He's opening it up.
Yes.
There's his message he sent himself. Hi, Peter. It's Peter.
Hi, Peter.
You're looking great today. Oh, hang in there.
Peter, you're ugly. Make yourself in a game.
If you're going to make yourself in Minecraft, you've got to be square, just like in real life.
Unearthed The Sims design documents show the internal debate over same-sex relationships.
Oh, okay.
About this.
No, I haven't. That's interesting.
Now, before we get anywhere, as far as I'm aware, citation needed, I think ultimately The Sims 1 did not allow same-sex relationships. Do you remember this?
I have no recollection. It's been such a long time.
My girlfriend, who's a Sims fan, said that she doesn't think they were in there, but I can't remember, and I didn't look it up. But I think ultimately the ending of this story...
I've done no research, but basically...
It might say it in the article, actually. But I think the ending of this story is that they weren't included. But there was a big debate about it, apparently.
Okay.
So, and it's, I think the weird part about this news is just that it's come out now, and it's like, oh, this game from like decades ago, there was a big debate at the time.
Interesting.
The Sims programmer Don Hopkins thought that anyone against adding same-sex relationships needed to grow up and get a life.
Right. Well said.
Damn right. The option to have same-sex relationships... this is according to PCGamer.com. Thank you very much. The option to have same-sex relationships in The Sims was a controversial decision that almost didn't make it into the final game. If I'd read as far as the first paragraph...
You would have known that it did make it into the final game.
It did make it. Well,
okay.
That's good.
That's good.
I'm pleased to hear it. But it almost didn't.
It almost didn't.
Though The Sims was meant to be a deep simulation of everyday domestic life, some developers at Maxis feared that controversy might give EA a reason to cancel The Sims outright. Right. As explained in this excellent interview with programmer Patrick J. Barrett, the third is his name, same-sex romance was initially included because of a managerial oversight. Oh, okay.
Right.
Now, thanks to some recently released design documents from programmer Don Hopkins, we have a new perspective on what was happening behind the scenes. The Sims is a beloved series today, but before the release of the first game, it was seen as a doomed experiment that EA was eager to sweep under the rug. After many tumultuous years spent in development, its own design team was convinced that EA was looking for a reason to kill the project and protect the SimCity name from being tarnished. No other game had facilitated same-sex relationships before, at least to this extent, and some people figured that maybe we weren't the ideal ones to be the first. As this was a game that EA really didn't want to begin with, Barrett said at the time.
Hello,
that was an actual train.
Train just went whoa.
But as notes in Don Hopkins' design documents explain, the first version of the romance system only allowed for interactions between heterosexual Sims, something he took great issue with. I will now cut to the chase with some screenshots that were posted on Twitter of internal documents.
Okay.
This was on Friday, I think. I saw it on Twitter when I was on the train. So this is really interesting. I'll just read these verbatim because they're great.
Okay.
The whole relationship design and implementation, I've looked at the tree code, is heterosexist and monosexist. We are going to be expected to do better than that after the SimCopter fiasco and the lip service that Maxis publicly gave in response about not being anti-gay. The code tests to see if the sex of the people trying to romantically interact is the same. And if so, the result is a somewhat violent negative interaction, clearly homophobic. We are definitely going to get flack for that. It would be much more realistic to add a model by to model it by two numbers from 0 to 100 for each person, which was the likelihood of that person being interested in a romantic interaction with each sex. So basically, you would be able to do a scale of like sexuality,
right,
from heterosexual to homosexual. I don't know if he means you could set that as a custom thing when you create your character, mm-hmm, or if the game would sort of work it out based on your interactions.
But that initially, whenever two heterosexual characters interacted in a sort of a romantic way, the programmed reaction was one of disgust.
Oh, once upon a time, like? Yeah, they would try and fight with each other.
Oh, wow.
Because it's like, okay, oh, you're gay.
Ooh,
don't touch me.
Fight me.
Yeah.
Let's wrestle.
With this model, you could simply motto monosexual, heterosexual, which is all we have now in the game. Monosexual, homosexual, like the guys in Simcopter. I don't know what happened with Simcopter.
Yeah, something really went down with Simcopter.
Apparently. Bisexual, non-sexual, and then in brackets it says Mother Teresa, presumably. That's just an example of someone who's okay. Non-sexual.
All right, okay.
And all shades in between, most of the rest of the world's population, it says in brackets. And then he says, you know, this scale could be influenced partially by random factors. And anyone offended by this idea needs to grow up and get a life. And hopefully our game will help them in that quest. Anyone who is afraid that it might offend the sensibilities of other people, but of course not themselves, is clearly homophobic by proxy, but doesn't realize it since they're projecting their homophobia onto other people. Hmm. So there you go. That's some internal documentation from the sexuality debate that took place in The Sims 1's development.
Interesting. That's interesting. So it sounds like a lot of the reservations that they had internally weren't so much that people working on the game had no time for gay people.
No.
It was more that they were worried about the backlash that would occur if they did include that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the public reaction. But, you know, there was a little note at the end there that kind of said, if you're saying that, you know, don't worry. Those people need to grow up and just get a life, those members of our audience.
Right.
But if you're saying that and you're standing by that,
you're part of the problem.
Maybe you're the issue here, you know? You're just sort of exacerbating homophobia. So,
well, good for them.
Yeah.
I honestly couldn't have told you that there were gay relationships available in the
I couldn't
first
remember.
Sims. No idea.
Confirmation there in that PC Gamer article. Thank you very much, PC Gamer.
That is weird. Politically correct gamer there.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I've got some weird news as well, Peter.
Mm. Is it weird?
It's pretty weird.
Okay.
It's pretty weird. This is from Polygon.
Mm-hmm.
One of Steam's top-selling titles last month was an intense sex game.
Intense sex game.
An intense sex game.
Okay.
Would you like to learn about the intense sex game that was the top-selling title last month? It was one of the top-selling titles.
Is it a game about intense sex or a sex game that is an intense game?
And it was also one of the top-selling titles last month. Yes, it was, Peter.
What? It was both of those?
It was both of those.
Okay.
Valve released its monthly report of top-selling games on Tuesday, and while the list is largely composed of familiar faces and recent releases, one nugget might raise eyebrows. I'm going to attempt to pronounce this game's name. Koikatsu Party, maybe.
Mm.
An anime game where you can build a waifu to exact specifications. The purpose of the game is to bed the people that you create.
Oh, good.
So, as we have said numerous times, we don't want to yuck anyone's yum. If you're into this, good for you. The reason we're including it here as weird news is that it's one of the top-selling games on Steam, which
That's
is kind of surprising.
Pretty weird.
Not that the game is weird, although we are about to describe it in graphic detail, and I know that probably Peter and I won't be too enthused by its contents.
As much as we don't want to yuck anyone's yum, I think we're still entitled to say, that's a bit weird.
That's a little strange.
Yeah.
In the last year, Valve has started approaching sex games on Steam with a more lax attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Where before, games with suggestive themes could sometimes be rejected from the storefront, Valve now allows nearly anything onto its store, even sex games.
Oh.
The caveat is that while anything can be sold, anything particularly adult has to be labeled as such. While exact numbers weren't provided in the blog post, Koekatsu Party is among the top-selling games of June 2019 in the platform, according to Valve. Why are people flocking to the game? Well, Koekatsu Party brands itself as the ultimate anime character maker.
Oh, okay.
Players are given over 300 options to adjust for the women or men they create, as well as a number of shaders to further customize their experience. Mm. You can even adjust anything from pubic hair to beauty marks.
What?
It should really have gone the other way around, shouldn't it? From beauty marks to pubic hair. Like, pubic hair was the normal thing that you can adjust. Even beauty marks? That's crazy.
What?
Once fans have made a character, they have up to 30 different personality choices to assign.
They have up to 30 minutes to do what they want with him or her, and then the character is lost forever.
They have a bus to catch and they never come back.
Yeah.
All of this fuss is made for one purpose, to have sex with whatever you create.
Whatever you create.
There's not much else to the game beyond character creation and sex.
Right.
Characters can have their own sexual preferences and sensitivity options, so they'll react differently to whatever you do to them.
Oh, God.
The game will then let you, and this is a quote from the game, touch, pull, lick, finger, and pump to your heart's content.
Right. Pull?
Pull.
Pull on what?
I think they're confusing this game with a bop it.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Flick it. Curiously, the game leans heavily on the stereotype of the otaku nerd who prefers 2D girls over actual women. The promotional text boasts the game will leave you wondering why you ever bothered with real people. Seriously, who needs reality when you have anime? That's a quote from the game blurb.
Have you seen an image of the sort of graphical quality?
It just looks like a graphic novel.
Right, so is it sort of 2D? It's like, yeah, it's just anime.
I say graphic novel, I mean like a, you know, like a visual novel, like a, just exactly like any screenshot of Persona, basically.
Right,
it's
yeah.
It's not
3D anime models.
Although Persona has 3D, but you know what I mean. When they're talking, they have like the
yeah, the little cutout. Artwork thing.
Yeah, it's basically
it's that level. So it's not even yet to create a 3D, you know.
Well, you might do. That's just the screenshot I've seen.
Okay.
And like Persona, that may just be the sort of dialogue options, and then you get some real filth.
Right.
In a bit.
Yeah, the dialogue options in this sex game.
Well.
You got to woo him or her
first. Speaking of dialogue options, I hope you speak Japanese. While the game is only available in Japanese, this limitation does not seem to be stopping Western players. If you look at the reviews for Koekatsu Party, it is full of English-speaking fans who have apparently fallen in love with the game. My friends do not talk to me anymore, one Steam user jokes. A lifetime of playing horrendous, unpolished H-Flash games on Newgrounds. Years of playing overpriced H shovelware. What is H? What is the H?
Hentai, possibly.
Is it? Could it be?
That's the only relevant word I can
think
of.
We're too innocent. We don't know the vernacular. H shovelware on Steam. Hours wasted trying to install Honey Select. Honey Select, that sounds like a delicious breakfast cereal.
Yeah.
Honey Select.
Here comes the Honey Select bee.
It all led up to this. Another says, porn games are finally good.
P games.
They continued. P games?
Yeah. Okay. Like H games.
Oh, right. P games. That's different. Again, P games is a very different thing. Many folks leaving top reviews for Koekatsu Party have spent several hours with the game. Notably, all of this isn't available out of the gate. Players must download a patch to uncensor the action, though at this point that's become tradition with any risque game on the platform. Steam might sell sex games, but sometimes you have to go an extra step to actually get to that action.
That's an interesting way of kind of covering themselves, in, as it were.
Or not.
Is that the game that you download from Steam is censored, and so Steam is saying, hey, look, the official version of the game coming from us doesn't show anything too bad, and then you have to go to a third-party patch, which I'm sure is essentially first-party, but it's just hosted elsewhere, and then that uncensors it. But Steam can wash their hands and be like, hey,
it wasn't
to do with us.
It's like torrents. Like, we don't host the files. We just let people use our website to communicate with one another. We're not doing anything wrong. Shut down. I mean, yeah, we deserve it. Please don't send me to prison.
Well, that
interesting.
Was a bit weird.
It was a little weird. One of the top-selling games on Steam last month, especially after we spoke about censorship and things the other week as well. I thought that was just a little bit pertinent to our previous discussions.
Mm.
Well, that was our weird news.
That was pretty weird.
Got another question here from...
Gutter Snipe.
Oh, my God.
You've got to stop adding Gutter Snipe's questions, otherwise one day my throat will just fall out.
Yeah.
No, never stop asking, Gutter Snipe. We like your questions. Gutter Snipe says, hi, guys. I just purchased a PS4, in brackets it says, first time.
First time.
And I was wondering what three games you'd sternly demand I should play. Loving the channel, lads. You're doing great things. And then there's a question mark in a box because the document has been unable to replicate some sort of emoticon.
Emoticon, yes. Yeah. And then it says tar.
Tar.
Just out of interest, is that what that does, that question mark? Because I don't have the emoji keyboard installed on my phone.
Right.
But usually I can still, my phone still understands what emojis are. Do you sometimes see on Twitter people whose usernames are largely comprised of question marks in small boxes?
That is partly because it's sometimes about like emoji keyboards and they've used like crazy stuff that's like, you know, really specific emojis. Hmm. But also just depending on how up to date your phone is.
My phone is really not up to date.
Yeah,
that's
I had
why.
That with my previous phone. Is that I got to the point where I stopped updating it because I was like, no. I think I knew what was coming in the next update, and I was like, I don't want that thing.
I think that's when I stopped as well.
And like, I started getting loads of question marks because there's loads of new, like, sort of official, if you like, emojis that you won't have. Of like, you know, the one where like someone's going like.
No, I don't. All I know is the square box with a question mark.
There's some quite new ones, and like there's like a shrug one now.
Just
I think
a square box with a question mark.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's all I see. That makes a lot of sense, actually. Yeah. I've started downloading. I don't download apps very often, but when I do, sometimes now they will say, "Would you like to download an older version of this app that's compatible with your phone?" Because I've got an iPhone 6,
right?
But I've just refused to update it for a couple of years now because I know that I wouldn't like the huge sort of operating system overhaul that they'd done, and inevitably it would have slowed down way more than it already has,
right?
And would have killed the battery by now. So yeah. That explains a lot. Thank you for that.
But also, yeah, in this instance, it's because Microsoft Word doesn't know how to.
It's because Microsoft Word is needs an update.
Yeah.
Or maybe we should just get a, you know, not the free trial version, then maybe it would understand what's going on.
Ben, you're a PS1, I was going to
sure
say PS connoisseur.
I'm a PlayStation 1.
It came out
one.
As PS1-a-sir somehow. you're a PS4 connoisseur.
I sure am, Peter. I love that console.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really good games on it.
There are a lot of really good games. I can see one of yours that I've written. I can't see.
Can you read my handwriting? I don't know if you can. It's
I can read
of
the
chicken scratch.
Sort of, yeah. I don't know. Just tell us.
I will.
Yeah.
See, I've gone for exclusives because we don't know if
me too
has an Xbox One or has played, you know, third-party games that you can get on other platforms, that sort of stuff. So I've gone with some recent recommendations. Last year's God of War. If you want a fantasy epic set in an incredible mythological world that Assassin's Creed only dreams it could replicate. Then you should absolutely get that. It's one of the best games actually ever. So you should play that. If you want a game that's going to challenge you but is completely unique and you can't play anything like it anywhere else, get Bloodborne. But if you're not into that, then you want something a bit more lighthearted but still incredibly competent. And my God, I've been thinking about it a lot recently and I think I'll probably play through it again. Marvel's Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. But if you aren't really into sort of very challenging games like Bloodborne, then I totally get that because some of them just aren't for everyone, as I learned with Sekiro this year.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't for me. Horizon Zero Dawn. If you want a story that's going to keep you completely hooked from start to finish, then that is a phenomenal game to play. Not completely ignoring the setting and the combat and the beautiful open world. The main story is so good in that.
Mm-hmm.
And the hook at the center of it is so intriguing that you will be absolutely pulled in. I promise you.
Yeah, I sort of tried to guess in my head what you might bring. I thought God of War would be there, Bloodborne, and I wasn't really sure about the others. So what I thought I would do is talk about the games that I played, or a couple of them anyway, that I played when I first got my PS4. So depending on whether Guttersnipe has actually had a PS3 before, some of these aren't actually as relevant. But certainly Uncharted 4... I really enjoyed, and therefore, if Guttersnipe hasn't played Uncharted 1 to 3, you can get the Nathan Drake collection as well.
It's not a cologne. It's not a cologne.
What?
It sounds like a cologne.
What is? The Nathan Drake collection. Yeah.
It
the new fragrance
like
for men.
Maybe some sort of gift set that,
yeah.
your well-meaning grandma would buy for you, and it's got a shower gel in it.
Yeah. So if you've not played any or all of those, Uncharted 1 to 4 are phenomenal cinematic experiences. Similarly, The Last of Us Remastered is on PS4. Mm-hmm. You may have played it on PS3, but if not, play that game, please.
Do it.
Almost immediately. And Spider-Man is a recent one that I thoroughly enjoyed. And again, an exclusive, like you say, you know?
Yeah.
That's one that you will not have played anywhere else. And you should sit your flipping bottom on the floor or sofa.
Get that behind down.
And play the game.
Play the game.
Da na 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 na. It's good.
Yeah. God, now I really want to play it. Mm. I was thinking about that. Last year, there were two phenomenal standout first-party exclusives.
Yeah.
This year, we've had Days Gone. And I haven't played it.
Right.
But I feel no urge to play it.
Yeah.
And as a big PlayStation fan, that should probably tell you a lot.
Yeah, I think because you've got some games that you associate in your head with PlayStation, like Crash,
mm-hmm.
Crash Team Racing, but that's not exclusive.
No.
You know, Resident Evil again.
Yeah.
I guess there were some Resi games on Wii and stuff, but it kind of, when you think of Resident Evil, you think of PlayStation. But also, you know, that's not exclusive, is it either? Right.
What's that? Sorry.
Resident Evil 2 remake.
No, it's not.
So, I think there are fewer standout exclusive this year, really.
Yeah, and I suppose that's because that's entirely why they skipped E3. It's because they didn't really have anything to show, or they're gearing up for the PlayStation 5 or whatever it is. There's a multitude of reasons for it.
Mm-hmm.
But just thinking generally about this year, when I think of PlayStation exclusives, I think of grand epics that sort of sweep me away, and I get obsessed with them for like 2 weeks or however, you know, 3 weeks, however long it takes me to finish them, or, you know, finish the game and then go for the platinum and just truly experience everything that game has to offer. And they're always something to really look forward to. And there's been nothing like that this year.
Yeah.
And not just talking about exclusives, like Resi 2 was really good at the start of the year. I really enjoyed that. But I was like, you know, I played it over the course of a weekend and then I was done.
Right.
Metro really disappointed me. I'm just trying to think of what. Sekiro was not for me.
Mm.
Obviously, Borderlands Game of the Year Edition, fantastic, but it's not a new game.
Yeah.
Borderlands 3 is coming out. That's something that could potentially turn things around a little. But Crash Team Racing really is the only game that's come out this year that I have stuck with and really played. And that's kind of a shame.
Yeah,
because we're halfway through and there's... And I haven't had anything.
And
really.
Again, that's not a game that exactly has a, you know, a big meaty narrative to it. You know,
no.
It's a lot of fun to just, you know, do some races, but
it's literally a grind.
Yeah,
like that's what it is. And I need someone to come out with something that just sweeps me off my feet.
I'm trying to think if there's anything slated for the rest of the year, but
we've got Star Wars. Is Death Stranding meant to come out? Because if it is, that's insane. That's
right.
Not going to happen.
Yeah.
The Outer Worlds, I believe, is still slated for the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So there's potential, but there's also potential for all of those games to be pushed.
Yeah.
And for this year
to be a bit
disappointment.
Of a disappointment.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Speaking of disappointments.
Yes.
Well, what's that peeking out? You see disappointment over there? You see what's behind the disappointment? It's sort of poking out over the top. Okay, now it's dwarfing it. Oh my God, it's massive. Look at the size of that thing that's poking out from around the disappointment. It's a huge discussion. It's time for the big discussion.
I'm too small to comprehend.
It is big discussion time. Are you ready, Peter Austin, for the big discussion?
Got fire.
Beep, boop, boop, beep, boop, boop. This comes from Ginny.
Ginny.
Ginny says, has Rockstar pushed the bar too far with having an actual casino with gambling in GTA Online? Or do you think there's no real issue since you can't turn the winnings from the casino back into real cash? I think loot boxes are still way worse.
Little factoid I heard about this morning. The new GTA casino update is unavailable in 50 countries around the world.
Is it really?
I believe citation needed, but I think it said countries, yes.
I did not know that.
Hmm.
That is surprising.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, we've got a little bit more context from Forbes.
Mm-hmm.
Would you mind contexting us, Peter?
Sure. Want the whole thing?
Let's get the whole thing in us.
Rockstar Games have added the Diamond Casino and Resort to GTA Online. It's a pretty cool-sounding new location, replete with a rooftop infinity pool, lots of new missions, and a virtual casino where you can spend in-game chips on slot machines, roulette, blackjack, or three-hand poker.
Ooh.
This is where things get dicey. Did you get it? Because of dice.
Yeah, I do.
You can spend real money in GTA Online to purchase the game's in-game currency, which you can then spend on cosmetics, vehicles, and so forth. You can now also spend this currency on the casino chips, which are essentially a second in-game currency that can be used for various casino-related activities and cosmetics, and to purchase chips with.
Mm.
Have they just said that you spend money to buy chips and you can purchase chips with them? Oh, it's lowercase chips. Do they mean, are they being funny? Can you also buy chips?
I have no idea.
Why have they said you can purchase chips with the chips? Anyway, so
with your winnings? Is that what that means?
Well, it can be used for various activities and cosmetics and to purchase chips with. And they're talking about the chips already.
Right.
Weird. Forbes, everyone.
Yeah, that was just some real mind bender.
They might be trying to be funny and they're talking about potato chips.
Well, it's not working.
No. So, you can spend real money to buy in-game chips and then gamble them away. In the process, you can win chips and spend those chips on more gambling or more in-game content. What you can't do is take those chips and cash them in for real money.
This is a big story. This was picked up by lots of mainstream news outlets, particularly in the wake of the loot box craze and so on. Is it gambling? No, rules several governments.
Yeah.
But here, they have just straight up added a casino.
Made an actual casino, yeah.
Where you can add stuff. So my real issue with sort of premium currencies for existing games is when it's in the single player. When it seeps into my single player experience and I can buy stuff with for additional money that I feel like should be made available to me for free.
Right.
That's when I have an issue.
Yeah.
If it's for an online mode, then I don't really have an issue with people being able to buy the currency.
Okay.
That's not something that I have a huge problem with.
I'm almost the other way around, actually.
Okay.
I feel like, I mean, it's very much, it depends on whether things are just cosmetic or if it's, you know, actually gives you an advantage over other players, you know, being able to buy weapons or cool cars or something with real money. But I'm happy for there to be an option for me to purchase things in single player, especially, or ideally, if there's also a way to earn that currency in-game without paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
But if we are talking literally just about premium currency, yeah, it's a bit annoying when stuff is gated behind money in a single player.
Right.
But pay-to-win mechanics, or even really, to an extent, pay-to-look way better and more interesting than everyone else, actually annoys me a little bit in multiplayer games.
Oh, don't get me wrong. It annoys me too. I just mean, yeah, I'm not talking about pay-to-win.
No.
I'm talking about microtransaction currency. Like, when I start up Rage, for example, and it's got three different currencies,
yeah,
that can get in the bin. I don't want that.
No.
If that's relegated to an online mode where people can buy skins, I don't care.
Yeah.
That's fine. If it's got to be in there, that's how I'd prefer it to be.
I don't. Yeah. Again, like I hasten to add that I understand the benefits of having cosmetic stuff in a multiplayer game. You know, that's how things like TF2 have been able to sustain themselves as free to play games for this long, and will continue to do so. You know, cosmetics in games that you pay for are a great business model, really. And pay-to-win is significantly worse, as I'm sure we can all agree. But yeah, as a general rule, I think I would rather be able to just choose to buy stuff in single player if I wanted to than have it, you know, kind of split the crowd so much in a multiplayer experience.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But in any case, that's kind of almost a different argument, really. We're talking about the gambling. It's so brazen, isn't it? It's an actual casino.
That's what I was...
They know it's such a hot topic.
That was my next point, is that if this was anything else, if this was a... If this was even a fun fair where you could win tokens, then it would be fine. It's just because they've just... It's an actual casino that people, of course, are going to take issue with it.
Yeah.
But by that same token, it's also... It also shouldn't be treated any differently.
No.
I suppose then it's no longer a debate about gambling addiction and like people getting stuck there and pouring loads of their own money into this virtual slot machine or whatever.
Mm.
It becomes more about censorship and parental controls, because there's a huge contingent of children and teenagers who play GTA Online.
And legally should not be playing it.
And they shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely... not Rockstar's concern. Honestly, as an 18-rated game, they should be able to put in here whatever they want.
Yeah.
It's for adults. And if children are influenced by that, that is a failing of the parents.
Yeah.
And it's as simple as that. But as you said, it's so brazen for them to just put a casino in.
It's
if
such
it was
a hot topic
anything else, it would be fine.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's a casino makes it not okay for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Which is a double-edged sword.
It's funny, as you were saying at the start, I think very recently in the past few weeks, the UK, I don't know what the name of the body is, but some sort of commission that debates on whether things are gambling and stuff, have come back for a second time and said that loot crates are not gambling.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the UK's stance on certainly on loot crates. This is a weird thing, though, in that maybe the fact that you can't get real money out of it is the one thing that kind of makes it less of an issue. You know, certainly if you were somehow able to then cash in on that cash, which would be a terrible business model, we should say, that would be, well, it would be real gambling for one thing.
That is the third point I've got written down.
Right, okay.
Is that surely if you were able to take money out, that would be the issue.
Yeah.
The fact that you can't take any money out makes it exactly the same as any other system that exists in the game anyway. It's just the fact that it's got this superficial cover of it being an actual casino that makes people uncomfortable with it. If you could take cash out, that would be a problem.
Mm.
But you can't. So it's not that.
No. But on the other hand, you can still put money, real money in.
You can.
And get the kind of dopamine rush, probably almost like for like, that someone would get being in a real casino, or certainly online gambling.
Right.
Literally doing real online gambling on a website. You know, you'll be getting the same rush out of that.
And at that point, we have to separate ourselves from the facade of it being an in-game casino, because now we're just talking about microcurrencies and microtransactions and essentially loot boxes and random rewards again. The fact that it's got a casino covered skin over it doesn't make it any different from what was already happening.
Yeah, it's no different than if Star Wars Battlefront, for example, had a big problem with their loot crates. You know, if that was skinned so that it was all set in Jabba the Hutt's casino.
Exactly, yeah.
Or vice versa.
It would be considered way worse.
Exactly.
It's the same thing.
Or if this had come out and, like you say, it was a fun fair or not set in a casino, that wouldn't be any worse or less bad than what's going on in Star Wars. So in a sense, this is nothing new. It's just that facade that is sort of muddying the waters a little
Rockstar
bit.
Rockstar just like, we're too big. They'll come to us.
Yeah, they will for their free car.
But the debate rumbles on, doesn't it?
Yeah.
This has just given more ammunition to various different groups with different ideas to push and or pull in their direction. Ultimately, though, this is an adult game.
It is.
If they put, as you said, if they put Jabba's Casino in Star Wars Battlefront 2, the reason Star Wars Battlefront 2 was a particularly bad example is just how popular Star Wars is with kids and how that game was not rated 18.
Yeah, that was a bad move for them.
So if they did that, that would have been inexcusable, because children can play that game. But here, this is for adults.
Yeah.
And there needs to be an element of discretion that adults use. And if they have an issue with gambling, or if they have an addictive personality of some kind, then they need to take responsibility for that. And if they're unable to take responsibility for that, then it, because they have special needs or something like that, then someone needs to be able to help them. But I don't feel like that is the responsibility of Rockstar in this instance.
Well, no, because if you have in your mind this person, a hypothetical person who has a gambling issue, and they realize, oh, now there's a casino on GTA, I'm going to play that now as well and sink all my money into that. You know, you might say, oh, that's terrible. Rockstar are facilitating this behavior. It's like, okay, well, if Rockstar, for argument's sake, just pulled this next week and said, oh, it's too controversial, we shouldn't have done it, that person who's been gambling in GTA is just going to go, all right, I'll just go back to the bookies then.
Or where I can get real money.
I'll just go to the casino.
And that's the thing. They'll still get the dopamine rush, potentially, from winning huge money in the game. But the fact that they can't take the money out has to be a huge factor here.
Mm.
Because if you went to the bookies and you put some money down and you won, you'd be like, oh my God, this is real money. I can do stuff with.
Yeah, I can start making a living doing this.
It's different. Mm. You will get bored. I've had card games on my phone, this is years and years ago now, where I would that were free, and I would put money in to unlock cards, and I would spend, like, you know, maybe a few quid a week, sometimes more than that, and I felt it was justified because the card game was free and I would play it a lot and I wanted to give some money back and stuff, but also there was definitely that hook, that dopamine release that kept you playing and kept you thinking I could unlock a really good card if I put some money in. Eventually though, you get bored of the game and you walk away. It's not the same as gambling, where you can get money out. Now don't get me wrong, I'm not a fan of it,
right,
and I don't like it, but we've got to make a distinction here. We have to use facts in this debate, otherwise nothing, we move nowhere.
Yeah, as you say, you know, you would probably get bored and walk away from it, but, you know, one way or the other, if GTA Online didn't have an online casino, which isn't actually real gambling anyway because there's no money to be won, then those people that we're talking about with addictive personalities and gambling problems would just go elsewhere to gamble. They would go to a real casino, or they would they would play poker on the internet where you can, you know, gamble real money. So this isn't, I don't think, it's not going to cause any further problems necessarily that wouldn't have already occurred elsewhere. But I can see why this has been controversial. It is because of that brazen, you know,
it's a casino
frontage. Yeah.
Come at us.
But I think ultimately it's no different. If you break it down, it's no different to, you know, things that already exist. Now, what you think about those is a different argument to an extent. But you know, it's basically just loot crates, etc. It's just all the same kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's no more similar to a real casino.
I agree. But what do you think? You let us know in the comments, because it is a bit of a weird one.
Mm.
But as we've said, you know, this is ultimately, this boils down to exactly the same debate that's been had time and time again. It's just the fact that it's got a casino skin on it.
Yeah.
But it's for adults. So where do you draw the line?
Mm.
Why be Denny different? Let us know in the comments below about everything that we've spoken about.
Why be Denny different?
It's a reference to something obscure, don't worry. Oh, okay. At least three people got it.
Excellent.
That was just for me.
Okay.
That was a treat for Ben.
Very good.
I just wanted to put that in there. Peter, if people want to interact with us somewhere and somehow, how can they do that?
You can interact with us on social media, Twitter and Facebook, /Team Triple Jump. If you want to watch us elsewhere, we're on youtube.com /Team Triple Jump and twitch.tv/Team Triple Jump.
Oh.
You can also interact with us by giving us your money.
Yes.
On patreon.com/Team Triple Jump, where we have all kinds of rewards. We don't just take it from you like GTA Online and give you nothing back.
No.
We give you little treats. If you're watching the video version of this podcast, you can listen to the audio version at play.acast.com/s/triple jump. There's no team there.
No.
Our website is tripleju.mp, triplej.mup, where we have a store and a careers page with no jobs on it at the moment, but keep an eye on it. And if you do go to that Patreon, one of the benefits is there's a special room in our Discord, which is bit.ly/team triple jump.
Wonderful. If you'd like to follow the two of us on Twitter, you can do at @ThatPeterAustin and at @Confused_Dude. And you can do the same thing on Instagram at @ThatPeterAustin, at @BenPotter20. We have both teased a new show that we recorded this week. So if you want to find out some more information, why not go over there and give us a follow?
Onto Instagram.
You can go check it out. We also released one of our new shows.
We did.
This week.
Yeah.
Called Cut Content. Thank you very much to Boof from the Yogscast for being our first guest.
Yeah.
It is heavily inspired, obviously, by our wonderful friends / roommates over at Cultaholic. They have a show called Straight to Hell, which is essentially Room 101, as I'm sure a lot of you are aware, where a guest brings three things they don't like that they wish they could cut from the world of wrestling. Well, we're doing that, but with video games.
Yeah, and so, we can, because we're a sister company and we're allowed to rip them off however we wish.
Absolutely, and we did talk to them first, and they said, that's a good idea, you should do it. Just in case people think there's drama, because people always like to assume the worst.
People think there's drama?
No, but some people are like, I can't believe you ripped us. Like, Shut up. We're the same company. Yeah. Get out of here.
We drink
your scamps.
Tea and coffee together.
Yeah, out of the same mug.
Yeah.
There's just a big communal office mug and we all bring straws.
The trough.
Everybody's got a straw.
Yeah.
We don't have mugs, we have straws. Mm. We've got a fair bit of feedback for it that we're definitely paying attention to. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we don't have the luxury, being in Newcastle, of having many people in the area. So we're going to have to do sort of Discord / Skype calls. Mm. And as a result, there's always some sort of technical delay that results in sort of talking over each other and stuff. So the way that we've done it is, instead of doing a side-by-side video.
Picture, yeah.
Where one half is the guest and one half is us, we sort of cut between the two, because otherwise there's a little bit of talking over each other and it just doesn't, like, that was the best way we could get around it.
Yeah,
basically.
You can hide those talking over each other moments by cutting between them and using some clever editing.
Mm, exactly. So if you're wondering why we did that, that's why. And some people also had an issue with the music as well.
Apparently.
Which we couldn't really tell on our end. It sounded fine, but we think that maybe the music that we've chosen could be quite bassy depending on your speakers or your headphones. So it may be amplified for some people, but for us it sounded fine, so we'll look at that for next time.
Yeah.
But this is why it's important to give us feedback, because, you know, we're not gods.
Yeah.
We don't know all this stuff.
We don't have a series of different speakers and headphones in the cupboard to
we
try.
Can test. Will it sound good on Beats by Dre? I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no idea. But apparently some people had an issue with the background music, so we'll look into that.
Yeah.
But if something seems a little bit weird, like a stylistic choice, for example, us just cutting back and forth between the footage, it's because, you know, there might be a reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
And equally, it's because the show isn't about us, it's about the guests. So we don't want to just sit there silently nodding on one side of the screen for 10 minutes at a time. You don't want to see that. That's no fun. But there we go. There's a little bit of insight for you there. I hope that makes sense. I hope that I know analytically, not many people stick around until this point in the podcast.
No.
Once we start doing the,
so if you're still here,
the plugs.
Hi.
This is where we sort of do a little bit of soul searching and we get stuff off our chest. So if you see people not complaining but sort of bringing up those issues, maybe set them straight. Maybe let them know. We'd appreciate it.
Mm.
It helps all the time. Very big.
Yeah.
Lists every Tuesday and Thursday. Streams every Monday, Tuesday and Thursday. Monday and Tuesday being on Twitch. Thursday being on Your Tube.
Whose Tube?
Your Tube. Mm. Worst Games is fortnightly. That's Friday for patrons and Sunday for everyone else. There's a Worst Games this weekend.
There is.
Went out yesterday for patrons.
Yeah.
And it goes out tomorrow for everybody else. Mm. Podcast is, of course, every Saturday. We've got two new shows coming next month as well. And then following that month, hopefully, you'll get four shows a month on top of everything else. And that'll go in rotation. So please be excited. And thank you all very much for your support. Finally, please leave us an iTunes review or a review / rating on your platform of choice.
Something about algorithms.
Oh, thank you. Right. One final thank you for today's sponsor, the Blaskovich twins.
Yeah.
The Terror twins of Wolfenstein Youngblood. They are standing by to scare off Nazis.
The Nazi menace.
The Nazi menace. And if you need them, what you do is you just shine the BJ signal into the sky. BJ, of course, being their father. Let's not be lewd. And if you shine it for long enough, Peter will come along as well and do some commentary for BAFTA.
Yeah, I'll watch them beating up the Nazi menace, and I'll just sort of I'll say, yeah, yeah, this is a good thing. This is a good thing.
This is a good
why
thing.
Was it? I don't understand why it was a controversial statement.
I don't know. I do think understand it's just, why it was I think it was just very blunt.
Yeah.
I think it was just quite blunt.
She didn't expect it.
Yeah, it took everyone by surprise, I think.
But I'd like to stand behind the defense of... It's not a good defense because you're on BAFTA and you probably just shouldn't bring up the
probably
Nazi Party.
Shouldn't bring...
But, but no, I like to say, even though I know it's not... It doesn't stand up. Well, what? Does she not like beating up Nazis? What? Is she some sort of Nazi sympathiser?
That's not what Peter thinks.
No,
that's
I don't think anyone on that board was a Nazi sympathiser.
They were all
lovely.
Everyone at BAFTA was so they lovely really to us. Nice. We were very grateful for the opportunity, and I'm sorry I stole the cue card. I didn't realise I wasn't allowed to take it home. It's on my fridge.
It is.
So we both committed BAFTA crimes that day.
It's got a little bit of gold leaf on it. That.
I think that's why I wasn't allowed to take it back. Mm. But I'd already put it in my bag and was in the car by the time I was told that I wasn't. Because apparently I tuned out when they said if you could return them.
Right.
Nobody stopped me, though. I didn't make a big show of it, but it was probably pretty obvious that it went straight in my backpack.
They need some gold detectors on the way out.
Just thought, little
souvenir from
souvenir
BAFTA.
From BAFTA there. My ill-gotten BAFTA card. Wonderful. Right, we should go now.
We should.
Thank you very much for watching, everybody. We'll be back next week. Have a lovely rest of your weekend. Have a nice Sunday. Mm. Go on, treat yourself. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.